Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 17 of Nerd Pride Radio. 17, not just an awesome prime number, but also in the Illuminatus trilogy, there are 17 steps on the pyramid that symbolizes Discordia. Why? Well, because as the book says, the number 17 has, quote, virtually no interesting geometric, arithmetic, or mystical qualities. 17. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, a movie nerd, a science nerd, a gaming nerd, and there's also about seven other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that I just can't fit in my brain anymore. Our sponsor this week is the Hyrule Bikini Team, and we are proud to have them as a sponsor. They are truly a great bunch of guys. So, first off on the agenda, updates! Okay. I've been talking about Archipelago, the role-playing game that I'm playing on our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. And I'm sure you guys are getting tired of it. I don't care. I'm having an awesome time with this. And here's the deal with Archipelago. We're just having a good time. It is kind of a free-floating story sort of thing. I mean, there is a game master, but we're going to rotate that position. And we're just kind of developing the story. There's no real solid rules. There's no dice, none of that. We're just putting the story together. And what I'm excited about with it, and this is brand new for me, is I want a game in which my players have way more control over the story than I'm used to. And it kind of throws me a little bit because as much as I trust my players and I love my players and they do great, great stuff, it still makes me nervous that things are going to get out of hand. But I guess, you know, that's kind of the point, isn't it? I mean, like right now it's just little things. As they describe their character, one of them describes a pendant that has an old coin on it. And that leads to a little paragraph that describes old currencies. And so there, he's just established that part of this world is this currency, which is no longer in favor. Ooh, that's cool stuff. In talking about the ship, they're on this ship, and we haven't really designated much, except we kind of know what it looks like, and we know that it's a steamship that flies. And then one of the guys happens to mention in passing that, oh yeah, you can tell that it's an old military design. Oh, cool. See, we didn't even know it was a military ship. And so I'm letting them pick the details of the world because, honestly, after this first mission, someone else is going to take over as Game Master and I'm going to slide into the player spot. I am excited to do that. Really excited. And so all of them, you know, even if you're not in the GM seat right now, everybody should have an equal say in what this world is going to look like. Yeah, as the current game master, maybe I have the control over the plot, or at least more control over the plot than everybody else, but even still, one of the dudes, Flameblade, he's not even a regular player, but he liked the game so much, he sent me some private messages and says, hey, I like these villains, can I play them for a little bit? And so he came in and he made a post from their perspective. Cool stuff. So I'm just excited. It is a new type of game for me, and I'm hoping to have more substantive reports. But, you know, we've got a couple pages, forum pages worth of material about it so far. So I'm really excited. I will keep you guys posted, whether you like it or not. And a second update. Remember last week I read some feedback stuff, some fake feedback that was all from spammers, and talked about how I get, you know, a few of these a day, probably five or so every day. Apparently, all of those robot spammers listen to my podcast, and I've pissed them off. Because, honestly, as of this morning, I suddenly have 35 in a single morning. So they are going crazy. In fact, why don't I click on over the website right now, and let's just see. I just cleaned them out not 45 minutes ago as I was setting down to prepare for the podcast. And, oh, my God, look, There's five more. So, the lesson to be learned, don't piss off spammers, man. God, they will get you. They'll get you. But now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me, where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list, I am going to start off at the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And of course, that music means that if you don't walk away now, you may be in danger of learning something. And that something today is Angela Zhang. Angela Zhang is 17 years old. She lives in Southern California. And she just recently won the grand prize at the Siemens Competition for Math, Science, and Technology. How'd she do that, you ask? Well, as it turns out, Angela, 17-year-old Angela, designed a nanoparticle. See, and that's where we're going to stop for just a moment. She designed a nanoparticle. What did you do last week? Yeah, well, you didn't do that, did you? See, that, to me, that's enough to win right there. A 17-year-old who designed a nanoparticle. But it gets better. She designed a nanoparticle composed primarily of iron oxide and gold. So rust and gold. And this sucker delivers chemotherapy directly to cancer cells and then facilitates non-invasive imaging. What? Yeah, here's the deal. You irradiate this stuff. You inject it along with whatever, you know, delivery system you're using. And these nanoparticles target straight to cancer cells, leaving the healthy cells alone, deliver chemotherapy directly to your cancer. And, oh, while they're there, they now make a perfect medium for whatever imaging solutions you're going to be using afterwards. And so I'm reading about this in a local newspaper, their website online, mercurynews.com. And mercurynews.com says, quote, "It's like sending in a cell phone carrying ninja to assassinate cancer stem cells and then report back while still in action," unquote. Oh my God, it is. This is amazing. All right. And so this is what she takes to the school fair. Well, or to the Siemens Competition for Math, Science, and Technology. 17 years old, and she's curing cancer. I've been out-nerded. All right? I cannot read this without feeling like a massive underachiever. What was I doing at 17? Well, let me show you the dungeon maps I designed. Honestly, this just floors me. And the more you read about her, the more you realize, yeah, this is the kind of person that is going to cure cancer. She is going to change the world. This is unreal. All right. And for her, I mean, okay, she talks about her early life and, you know, how her parents encouraged her and how everyone says she has just had a passion for research since she was little. That is what she loves. That is the thing that she enjoys more than anything is research. Wow. Well, did she get into the right field? You know, she wanted to get into the microbiology lab back when she was a freshman. And, oh, sorry, you're too young. But you know what? We'll set up an observation schedule. You can come in and watch and ask questions. Just don't touch anything. And she turns that into, oh, by the way, I designed some nanoparticles. I am just floored by this girl. She is amazing. She is my nerd of the year. She wins for all of 2011 as far as I'm concerned. Amazing. And her quote after this is that this was such a Cinderella moment for a science nerd like her. And like, damn right it is. God, there's just this level of nerd pride that goes along with this as we can all nerd out vicariously through her achievements. I think that is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And there's no stop to the nerdity as we lead right into a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. Actually, for this week's nerd culture report, I've decided that I am creating the Nerd Pride Radio Triumvirate. These are three names that came across my desktop as I was doing online research, reading, playing around, whatever I was doing. These three names caught my attention this week, and I've decided that I just have the utmost respect for these three, and I want to honor them by putting them in our triumvirate. Maybe eventually we can add some others to this, and we can come up with a whole Nerd Pride Radio pantheon. But for right now, the three names that are striking me, Mr. Rogers, because Mr. Rogers, I don't care that he's dead, Mr. Rogers is a saint, and you will not hear... And I will not hear you talking differently, all right? The man was an absolute saint. could do no wrong. Second, Christopher Walken. And why Christopher Walken? Because Christopher Walken can do no wrong. Christopher Walken, you can... He's made... Here's the thing. Christopher Walken has been in many poor quality movies in his life. But Christopher Walken has never turned in a bad performance in any of them. Christopher Walken is an acting genius, all right? This is a guy, he started off as a song and dance man, for goodness sake. All right, little old soft shoe. And then he turns into the biggest badass on the movie screen, all right? There's no scene that Christopher Walken cannot dominate, that he can't just walk away with. I already told you about watching him in Suicide Kings. In Suicide Kings, where he is tied to a chair for the entire movie, and he puts every other actor in that film to shame. All right, including Johnny Galecki, who I love and who did a wonderful performance, but he's no Christopher Walken, is he? All right, did you ever see The Prophecy? Or Prophecy 2, for that matter. In Prophecy, it is kind of a cheesy film, and it is a story of angels and devils, and we've got the traditional conflict between God and Satan, and then in comes the Archangel Gabriel, played by Christopher Walken, and Christopher Walken, as Gabriel, now decides he's going to take yet a third path. All right, and he is going to set himself at odds with God. And he actually makes Satan out to be kind of the hero. Satan helps set things right in this movie, only because he's maintaining the balance and needs to keep Christopher Walken from destroying the universe, which, by the way, Christopher Walken could totally do. And this was, like I say, a cheesy movie. It's a cheesy pulp science fiction kind of movie, but Christopher Walken killed it. Oh, you go watch The Prophecy just to see him. You are amazed. Oh, and also watch The Prophecy, because in this thing, angels of all stripes, whether they're good angels or fallen angels or whatever, angels of all stripes, apparently because of the wings, they love to perch on stuff. And so when you watch Satan come in and he's just sitting up on the rail, perched on a rail, like a bird that just landed there, it's creepy, creepy, and badass in a way that you just wouldn't even expect. So watch The Prophecy. But Christopher Walken does this. Every film he is in, Christopher Walken kills. I love Christopher Walken. I've seen him in interviews, and he is a fascinating person. And I suspect that there something in his head doesn't work the way it does for everybody else. Something in his his thought processes is just a little bit off, but in a good way. All right, so I have all sorts of respect for Christopher Walken and his talent. Not to mention, again, much like Justin Timberlake and John Goodman and Alec Baldwin and Tom Hanks, Christopher Walken is one of the greatest guest hosts of Saturday Night Live ever. You can't imagine how much respect that earns for me. The idea that you can come on to Saturday Night Live time after time after time and hit that mark every single time and be funny every single time. It is great, great stuff. You know who would have been a great host on Saturday Night Live? Or who was a great host, and I wish he'd come back, David Duchovny. David Duchovny, who, I like The X-Files as much as everybody else, whatever. And David Duchovny has a great name and a song, David Duchovny, Why Won't You Love Me? But when he was on Saturday Night Live, I completely did not see it coming. He was brilliant. His comedy chops are outstanding. And then he never came back that I know of. I only saw the one episode. But I'm getting away from my triumvirate. David Duchovny, as much as I love you, you are not in the triumvirate. The triumvirate, so far, Mr. Rogers, Christopher Walken, and now, Neil Patrick Harris. Does that make me a trendy nerd? All right, am I kind of a she sort of geek here for this? I suppose so. I don't care. I love Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris is just a classy, classy man. All right, and I fell in love with him from the first Harold and Kumar movie, which is where a lot of people first fell in love with him. I understand that. I'm not being terribly original. All right, and then the absolute kicker, most people loved him on How I Met Your Mother, and he is really good on How I Met Your Mother. I will grant that, but How I Met Your Mother is still a really confusing kind of sitcom that I just can't pay much attention to. No, it's Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog, and I'm not going to rave about that again because I've done that too many times. But Neil Patrick Harris is just a classy dude. He is a funny guy. He's a lot of fun. He's very interesting to listen to and to watch. And so, therefore, The three of these, Mr. Rogers, Christopher Walken, and Neil Patrick Harris, will now be the holy triumvirate of Nerd Pride Radio. Can we add others to their cabinet, to their pantheon later? Probably so. I will probably have regular induction ceremonies as the names come to me. But this is where we're going to start. It feels good. And did someone mention music and all of that? I don't think so, but we're going to go to the turntable anyway.
And jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, or just clap your hands, or just clap your hands.
That's right, it's the Nerd Pride turntable. It's just a wannabe music nerd talking about music. And this is not even going to be music in the strictest sense, because it's actually Christmas carols. As we're doing research for Christmas carols, we're actually, okay, I mentioned Holiday Hangman last week, and for Holiday Hangman, Yancey was doing a bunch of research on Christmas carols because he wanted to find an interesting or obscure Christmas carol name to put up there for Hangman. Yancey really likes to put up tricky ones that are technically holiday-related, technically relevant to what we're doing, and yet obscure enough that they've never heard of that stuff. That's the way he plays. So, in this quest of his, he discovered an old Christmas carol entitled A Bone God What, What being W-O-T, as in Captain What, if you're familiar with the good Captain. I said what? I said Captain. I said, all right, I'm not going to do the whole song. Have I done that on the show before? Doesn't make any difference. All right, that doesn't make any difference. Anyway, A Bone God What is a Christmas carol, an old Christmas carol, that is all about getting drunk. That's the entire thing. There is no mention of Christmas in here. There's no mention of snowflakes or raindrops or whiskers on kittens or whatever my favorite things are. No. This is all about getting drunk. And in fact, not just getting drunk, but showing up at your doorstep and telling you that, look, I'm singing you a song, so you'll give me some beer. Will you go get the beer? That's awesome. Okay, so that's what they do. And I mean, just a sample of this song, all right? The first few lines, all right, a bone god what sticks in my throat without I have a draft of corny ale. Nappy and stale, my life lies in great waste. Some ale or beer, gentle butler. Some liquor thou us show. See, this is awesome stuff. And this is, the entire song is like this. You cannot go two lines without them talking about beer or ale or wine or just bring me a damn drink, man. This is the greatest carol ever. I am just so impressed. Now, prior to A Bone God What, I had thought that the greatest Christmas carol ever was Deck Us All with Boston Charlie, which I don't even know if that is the actual title of the song. I just know that it comes from Pogo Possum, the old Walt Kelly strip, Pogo Possum subversive comic strip, ages and ages ago. Beautiful, fun stuff. And at some point, I believe while Christmas caroling, one of the characters, or all of the characters, I'm not sure, was singing Deck Us All with Boston Charlie, and then the rest of the song is just complete nonsense, all right? It's Walla Walla Wash in the Kalamazoo. I happen to know the song by heart, yes. But I learned that when I was 10 years old, and we were out Christmas caroling, of all things, in Alabama. And so Christmas caroling in Alabama is very, very different, because you don't have to wear the hat and gloves, and there's certainly no snow around. But we went out caroling anyway. And my dad, at some point as we're walking between houses, starts singing, Deck Us All with Boston Charlie, and he's giving. And I was just fascinated. I'm sure that's why he did it. And so, much like my dad knew all the words to Jabberwocky, my dad also knew all the words to this Christmas carol, and there's several verses to it. And he taught them all to me, and I thought that was the most brilliant thing ever. And I absolutely loved that. And so, again, greatest Christmas carol ever is a nonsense Christmas carol written by Walt Kelly until I found A Bone God What. Do I have a point? Yes, all Christmas carols need to be about demanding booze from your neighbors. That's the best. But enough of your happy talk. It's time to get the little ones out of the room and make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay, this all starts with the new Kindles, the Kindle Fire. Have you seen them? All right. They do everything. It's a new tablet that, well, okay, not everything, but it does everything that a tablet would do. It does everything that an iPad would do, except that it's a Kindle. So it's ostensibly an e-reader, except instead of being an e-reader, it's a tablet. So most tablets have e-reader function. This one has decided to go the other way. And so it brings me to, I don't want a new e-reader. I mean, you know, I have a Droid phone. I could read stuff on my Droid phone. I could put in the e-reader app, but I like my Kindle. I love the fact that my Kindle has, you know, a battery life of over a week if I'm not using the Wi-Fi on it. If I've already got my books downloaded and I just want to read, that battery lasts me forever. And I love the natural look pages, the ones that, you know, I don't even know what they're called. I don't know what the process is. All I know is that I can go in bright sunlight. I can be in a dimly lit room. It's like reading a regular book. It's like words on a page. It's not like a backlit screen or an LCD screen or anything like that. It's just like reading paper. I love my Kindle. And, of course, I paid way too much for my Kindle when I bought it, when I got it as a Christmas gift. That was a couple years ago. Because now, you know, I can go out and buy these things for what? A buck? I don't know. How much is an original Kindle? Like, I don't know, $66 now, $50. They're cheap, right? So I like having my Kindle separate. I don't want to have a Fire, except, man, the Kindle Fire looks so cool, right? All right, so then it gets me to thinking. I have a Kindle, an old school Kindle. That's me. That's, by the way, the name of my new band, Old School Kindle. And then I also have my home phone, which is just an ordinary flip phone. That's all I carry, just a regular flip phone. I'll have reasons for that. I'll explain in a minute. My work phone, because, well, I have to have one for work. And the work phone's the Droid, and it has all sorts of bells and whistles on it. Great stuff. Then on top of that, in case I need it, I also have a little portable Wi-Fi device that actually has the cell phone connection and then allows me to use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot. And again, I know if I were to get the updated Droid, then the updated Droid has the Wi-Fi capabilities, the hotspot capabilities built right into it. So I could do that. But then on top of that, I also have my iPod. I love my iPod. My iPod I use, it's an old iPod. It's an iPod Classic, and it stores all of my songs and all of my audiobooks and all of my podcasts. And if I had videos and TV shows and all that, it would have all that too. But everything that I want on it is there, and I still have only used up about a third of the space available to me. So I love my iPod. And now it starts to beg the question, look, you know, I understand you have all these things, and they all serve their function, and they're all really cool, but you know, why so many? All right? Why don't I go out, and when it's time to renew my contract, why don't I go get a new iPhone 4? I can get a new iPhone 4 with a contract renewal. I can get it from Verizon for $200. And for $200, that iPhone 4 will do all the apps, all the Droid stuff, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be the iPhone. It can be a Droid-powered device. It can be whatever. But I can get a phone that provides me with phone service, provides me with internet browsing, provides me with all of the apps that are available on all these modern smartphones. It could be my e-reader. It could certainly be my iPod. It would take care of all this stuff, and I only have one device to carry around. Right. Well, this is where my rage comes in. I don't want one device to carry around. I don't. Do you know why? Because I lose them. I lose them. I break them. Horrible things happen. All right. And now, I've had the Kindle for 2 years now. I haven't lost it. I haven't broken it. I've done really well with it. All right. It's working perfectly fine. I've had my iPod. I've had my iPod for over 3 years, and I love my iPod. I cannot tell you how much I love this thing. And have I lost it? Have I broken it? No. No, well, all right, I misplaced it a couple of times, but I always found it. You know, there it was. See? Right there. Most of my devices are okay, but I do have a history. Right? I had, let's see, the first pager that was issued to me back when my employer still gave pagers to its employees. My first pager wound up getting left in a suitcase. I completely could not find it. We wound up having to get it replaced through work. And then, oh, hey, look, it turns up that the thing was in my suitcase, and I found it like a year and a half later. I had another cell phone that wound up getting lost in a snowbank outside my house, and we never could find it. Finally had to get it replaced, and after we did find it, the snow thawed. There it was in the spring. Picked it up, plugged it in. Still worked just fine. There was nothing wrong with that thing. Sat in a snowbank for like 4 months. I mean, and sat in the snowbank where we park, so it got trapped under packed snow, and we would have driven over it millions of times. It was just fine, right? But lost that thing for months. I had another phone that, I accidentally dropped it as I was getting into the car, and I backed over it, so I cracked the screen and ruined that one. I had a phone that I accidentally left on the kitchen counter. The dog jumped up and ate it, and then I got a replacement phone. I loved it so much. It was just a flip phone, but I love that thing so much because it had a nice rubber cushion for its exterior. It's a great sturdy phone unless you give it to a dog. And so I wound up getting a replacement phone that was exactly the same because I loved it so much. Dog ate that one too. Apparently it's the rubber that he really likes. He's never touched any other phone but that rubber casing. Oh, darn it. Okay, so I am really hard on phones, and the idea for me is if I bought myself a single iPhone or a single Droid phone that had all of my crap on it, did everything I needed, I only needed to carry one device, I would lose that one device. I would. I know I would. Or for that matter, I would run over it, or I would, oh, well, then Mike, why don't you just buy the replacement plan? Because the replacement plan is for suckers, and we all know it, even though clearly I need it because I'm really hard on phones. It's for suckers, man. I'm not going to fall for that. I'm going to, you know, or when something goes wrong, something locks up, I like having other options. I like having other things. Maybe I just like being surrounded by toys. Maybe this is just the first step in me turning into a crotchety old man complaining about all those whippersnappers on my lawn with their newfangled devices that I just don't understand. I do computer repair. I do technology for a living. It's what I do. And yet, you know what? I'm just frustrated with all the choices that I can't keep up with. Maybe it's jealousy. Maybe my problem is me. Have I thought of that? I just did. I don't know. But either way, it drives me batty. It drives me crazy. And I don't even... This part of my anger at the whole thing is that I just don't even have a real focus for it. It's, you know, it's a stupid thing to be upset about, isn't it? So the only solution really is I just want technology to advance to the point where they just beam all this crap right into my head. Seriously. And not into a computer, implanted into my head, because then, you know, I have to worry about upgrades and I still have all this device technology stuff to worry about. Do I have the right brain implants? Do I have... No, I just want it beamed directly into my head, my music, my data, my everything. Give me a heads-up display, put right onto my retinas. I'm ready to go. That's all I want. Is that too much to ask? Okay, it is right now. Man, I wish that had a better direction. I really want to go somewhere with that, but it's just impotent rage for no good reason. I'm sorry. But you all know that the rage always ends our meticulously plotted portion and takes us straight into some music. Now, normally on this show, I like to do new music. Right? I like to do, or at least music not necessarily new, but music that I think most of you haven't heard before. All right, but I've changed that this week because I just can't stop listening to the Beastie Boys this week. I don't know what it is. I've just really been enjoying their stuff. They had a new song come out a couple months ago, and so I've gone back and pulled out the old stuff. I just love the Beastie Boys. I can't tell you how much respect I have for these guys. They're really good, and it's not part of their problem. They started off with Fight for Your Right to Party. For those of you who remember that, we all saw Fight for Your Right, and while it was a cool party song, especially when you were in high school, oh yeah, we all fell for that. We all knew all the words. And it seemed like that's who these guys were, that they were these fraternity-style jocks who literally were party boys. That's what the song seemed to indicate. And as it turns out, you find out later that no, the Beastie Boys are really talented. I mean, really talented. These are musical geniuses who made Fight for Your Right as a parody of the kind of things that they hated, the kind of things that they didn't want to be on stage. And yet, oh, that's what everybody came out to see, was wanted to see Fight for Your Right. That's what they became known for. But they have a lot of good stuff. And so I'm not going to give you anything new, probably. If you're not a Beastie Boys fan, go check out Sounds of Science. Sounds of Science is a Beastie Boys anthology. It's a 2-CD set with all sorts of great stuff from all throughout their career. It'll give you a good sample of what they do. They are great. All right, but the first one I'm going to play is off of their album Hello Nasty, which, by the way, the title of that album, I don't even know why this story entertains me so much, is they were putting out this record on the Nasty Records label. That was the label that they were working for. So every time they called up Nasty Records, they had one receptionist who worked up front, and that's how she always answered the phone, Hello Nasty. And they thought that was hysterical, and so they named their album Hello Nasty after this gal's greeting, which I think is an awesome story. And this song is Intergalactic. Intergalactic. I don't care that you already know that song. You loved listening to it again. Don't deny that. You love that song just as I do. Every week I do Sabotage for my opening and closing theme, which, again, Sabotage as performed by the Penelopes, but it's still a Beastie Boys song. And in fact, Sabotage, I'm not going to play it because I do have it in the theme, but Sabotage is truly their best song ever with their best video ever. I love that song. And now it's time for the Word of the Week. Are you ready for this one? This week's word is cullion. C-U-L-L-I-O-N. Cullion. And it is a British word meaning a mean or base fellow, a thug, a jerk, a douche, a cullion. All right? And I like this word because I have a thing for old style, old-timey slang, old-timey insults, but not ones that you think Yosemite Sam would be using. Not consarn it, dash, blast it. This kind of thing, but cool insults or cool slang that one of my favorites, open up a pack of fives. All right, now why would you say that? Well, a pack of fives clearly is a fist. You threaten someone with a fight, you want a knuckle sandwich. Well, no one would say knuckle sandwich, although we did all the time when I was a kid. But instead of knuckle sandwich, yeah, I'm about to open up a pack of fives on his ass, or a deck of fives, either one works. I just like old timey slang, and so cullion. Yeah, cullion is a great insult. I like this one. So, you know what? I'm going to start a thread about this. I want you guys to find me some really good old-timey slang, old-timey insults, because I just want to have them around. I want to start bringing some of them back, because, I mean, you guys hear me every week with a hot dog. You know how I am, all right? And hot dog is something that nobody has used since the 80s, I think, maybe a little bit before that, except that I went to an oral surgeon. I had to have a tooth pulled, and I went to this oral surgeon, and fun guy. He was making a lot of jokes, and he was chit-chatting, but not inappropriately so while I have, you know, my mouth is all numbed up, and I've got all the tubes and everything in there, and he's not asking me direct questions, but he is working to entertain me because I'm still conscious through the whole thing. And swear to God, the man gets in there, numbs it up, and I mean, he's in there with a scalpel, cutting my gums away so that he can get a good grip on this tooth. And if you've got a squeamish stomach, maybe you should fast forward about 30-40 seconds here. But he gets in there with his, I don't know, dental pliers. What do they hold? A monkey wrench? I have no idea what tools he uses. But this oral surgeon gets in there with those pliers, gets a good grip on that tooth, and I can feel the whole thing. I mean, it's numb, but clearly, you know, as he's working the thing back and forth, and I can feel my head shaking. I'm awake for the whole thing, listening to them talk. And then snap, and that tooth comes popping out like it's supposed to. And sure enough, my oral surgeon holds the thing up and goes, "Hot dog!" And it was just the funniest thing. If I had the capability of laughing at the moment, I would have. Because it was just this beautiful little moment of he pulls out a tooth and he yells, "Hot dog!" That's his scream of joy, his kalu kalay, hot dog. So I have made an effort ever since that day. That was my first word of the week, because I worked really, really hard to work that into my vocabulary since then, because I just thought it was brilliant. And so, similarly, you guys can take cullion, or pack of fives, or hot dog. You take your choice. You take cullion this week, and you work it into conversation. You find a place to insult somebody and refer to them as a cullion, a base cullion, a scurrilous cullion. All right, this is a great insult. All right. You work it into your daily conversation, or better yet, show up on my boards. Find a way to insult me on my boards by calling me a cullion. This will do two things. One, it'll show everybody that you listen to the podcast, which makes you instantly cool. And two, it'll also demonstrate that you are capable of applying the knowledge that you have gained, which is what we all seek, isn't it? And now it's time for... not yet. We're going to do one more song. This one, I got to thinking of this from the wassailing carol of A Bone God What, and I'm thinking of the Beastie Boys, and so as I'm thinking of drinks, I think of the song Brass Monkey, and that's what we're going to listen to. Wow, was that the most stupid, awkward intro I've ever made for any song ever? Yeah, probably. That's why I don't do segues. See? That's why I normally stick with, "Hey, guess what?" And then we just move on. But it doesn't matter. It's a good song anyway. Take a listen. We'll be right back.
how you feel.
You put your left leg
down.
Your right leg up. Tilt your head back. Let's finish the cut.
I'm sitting with the bottle.
Ross Kemp. And rock it nice with Charlie Chan. We don't mind shipments. Wherever we go, we bring the monkey with us. That's my D3.
My D3.
Double off puts the bill most definitely.
I'm treat Brass Monkey and I rock well. I got a castle in Brooklyn. That's where I dwell.
Brass Monkey. That funky monkey.
I love Brass Monkey. It makes me laugh. And my kids all love Brass Monkey as well. The two little ones especially. They think it's a great song. It's just very catchy, very simple. And I, of course, don't tell them that Brass Monkey is an alcoholic beverage. They just think it's a cool song. So I hope you like that one. It's not the greatest Beastie Boys song ever, but it's certainly a lot of fun. And that's what I'm into here. But now it's time for the badass movie quote of the week. And what do we have on the docket today? This is, I'm not even going to tell you the movie it's from first. I'm just going to give you the quote straight up. It's two guys talking, and they alternate very short lines here. So the first one, hey, it's me. Yeah, prove it. You're a dick? Yeah, okay, sure. See, that was it. That was Wolverine and Cyclops, Hugh Jackman and James Marsden from the first X-Men movie. I love that line. And I know it's cliche. I know everyone knows that line. It got a little bit overplayed. I don't care. I just thought it was hysterical. Prove it. You're a dick. Yeah, all right. Sure. See? That's funny stuff. I love that line. But you know what? I drag the movie quotes out way too long, too often. We're not going to do that this week. Instead, we're just going to go straight to the last song. This is their newest release. This is the one that got me thinking about Beastie Boys again. Anyway, I need to share it with you. Take a listen.
Yes, we need this. The best is yet to come in. Yes, believe this. Let go my echo while I flex my EO. Sip on Prosecco, dressed up to Keto. Sip my coffee playing Keno in the casino. Want a lucky number? Ask Mike Dino.
I'm on a competition like a flamethrower. My rhymes, they age like wine as I get older. I'm getting bold, the competition is waning. I got the ball and I see the lane in. We got a party on the left, a party on the right. We're on a party for the men.
See, that was the Beastie Boys with Make Some Noise. I love, love, love that song. It has won a hysterical video. Go look up Beastie Boys Make Some Noise on YouTube. Watch the video. You'll appreciate it. It's great. And it has a really good callback to Fight for Your Right. Because at this point, you know, the original song, you have to fight for your right to party. This time, you have to party for your right to fight. I don't know why that is supposed to make sense, but it's kind of a cute callback, and that's what the video is about, and it's just fun. I love the Beastie Boys. All kudos to them. You know what? Go out and check them out. Listen to some Beastie Boys stuff. But we're over halfway into the show now. We have got to get to the pod-o-matic. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me babble on about something? Then you send your questions or your topics to me by email, or better yet, sign up for our forums and send them to me in a private message, and I'll add them to our Pod-O-Matic list. The Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And this first number, oh, by the way, before I get to that, last week I did the Zimny Pod-O-Matic, and we eliminated a bunch of Zimny's stuff because he had more than anybody. I was down to 50 Pod-O-Matic entries by the end of last week. I put out a plea to all of you. Please, please, please help me out because I really needed it. As it turns out, you guys listened. At least 7 or 8 of you submitted huge lists of stuff. And no lie, I now have 216. That's 6 cubed, for God's sake. We have a lot, and this is awesome. Keep them coming. I love having the variety. I love having no clue what's going to happen each time. This is wonderful. And the first one, speaking of that, is number 98, which comes from Brasky. Ah, Brasky's back. And Brasky says, if you could talk game design with anyone, alive or dead, who would it be? And then he continues on and says, okay, but if you can't choose Fred Hicks, well, then who would it be? Oh, I was going to choose Fred Hicks. You know I was going to choose Fred Hicks. I mean, seriously, Fred Hicks, Evil Hat Productions, he helped design Fate, Spirit of the Century, games I love. Fred Hicks is, I've heard him in interviews on other podcasts, and he is just fascinating to listen to. Right? The guy's ideas on games, gaming, game design, the whole business, he's just fascinating. I love listening to him talk. I always said on our last podcast that if I had a chance to kick my brother out and take on Fred Hicks as my new co-host, I absolutely would have because I could talk to him every week about gaming. That guy, he is so cool. I'm a fanboy, right? Am I clearly being kind of a fawning toady here? A little bit, but I don't care. But since Brasky has now decided that I have to choose someone other than Fred Hicks, a chance to talk with anyone about game design. I'd probably have to go with Jesus. Imagine that. Put that in your bragging rights, right? Number 40. This one is also from Brasky. Guess who was one of the ones that submitted a lot this week? Yeah. Brasky says, hey, I've been listening to the Nerdist podcast by Chris Hardwick, and it's totally amazing. He interviewed Felicia Day, and it was the most compelling interview of her I've ever heard. Ever. Do you have any advice on how I could get Hardwick to notice me? He doesn't respond to my emails. All right. Well, first off, it is not the most amazing interview with Felicia Day you've ever heard. It's not, because I know you've heard my interview with Felicia Day, and you're taunting me. Second of all, the Nerdist podcast is, if you've never listened to the Nerdist podcast with Chris Hardwick, It's about nerd stuff, but it's also about comedy. It's about things that interest Chris Hardwick. He's got a couple of cool co-hosts who are a lot of fun. It's a good show. It's entertaining. It's one that I don't have it in my regular rotation of podcasts. It's one that doesn't compel me to, I have to listen every single week, but I enjoy it. And it's got nerd in the name. You can't go wrong with that. So here's the deal, Brasky. If you want to get on the Nerdist podcast with Chris Hardwick, it doesn't even say you want to get on the podcast. You just want him to notice you. You want Chris Hardwick to notice you. All right. To do that, you need to do something noteworthy with your life. And that gives me a 20. Thank you, R2. 20 is also from Brasky. Okay. I see how this one's going. From Brasky, it says, I like wearing pink, but I'm still subject to the comments from other guys in my office of, pink? Really? So, Mike, please come out in support of pink attire and how it is sexual preference neutral. Well, of course it is, supposedly. It's not even, I don't think it has anything to do with sexual preference. I don't think wearing pink makes you gay or not gay or makes any difference at all. Although, it is in our culture still associated with girls. I mean, pink is for at least the last, 50, 100 years, pink has been traditionally a girl color, and so therefore if you're a dude and wear pink, people are going to associate that with girlishness, and there's nothing wrong with being girlish. Fashion-wise, it, like any other fashion rule, you just have to know, you can't wear white after Labor Day, apparently. I don't know what all the rules are. There are colors that don't go together. There's styles that don't go together. There are things that are in fashion, out of fashion, colors that are in for this season. Well, pink is one that just isn't in for dudes. I've seen lots of guys who can pull off a pink shirt. Lots of guys, especially if you're at work, a pink polo or a pink button-down shirt with a tie. There's nothing wrong with pink. You're going to wear a bright hot pink. people are going to think you're making a statement. I don't care one way or another. But, you know, for example, my oldest son and his two best friends. The three of them have matching hot pink shirts. And they had the three shirts made up with, all right, in, much in the spirit of Team Edward and Team Jacob from the Twilight movies. They put up these three hot pink shirts, matching shirts, that say Team, and then they have their own name on the shirt. Right, except then, they then rotated shirts. They each wear a team whatever. So we have a Team Gygax, a Team Wilhelms, and a Team McDiddles. And they've now rotated the shirts, so they're each wearing the other dude's shirt. And those are in hot, hot pink, Team some other dude's name on it, and they all three wore their matching pink shirts to go see the latest Twilight movie just a couple of weeks ago. Now, does any of that make them gay? Absolutely not. See, the guys that you're dealing with, you know, they're ignorant, all right? And that's it's just something we have to deal with. Because seriously, there's nothing wrong with this. Again, it's not fashionable necessarily. It is going to make people think of it's a girl color. But, you know, who cares? You know, eventually people will pull themselves out of this ignorance. Eventually, we'll get over it. It's just a matter of time. And in the meantime, continue to wear pink. I mean, if you like it, if you look good in it, if you feel good in it, that's all that matters. Don't worry about them. I fully support you. Number 62. This one is from Not Brasky. Hey, this one's from Sirius Paul. I love Sirius Paul. Not you, Brasky. And Sirius Paul asks, did you also think that the 13th Warrior rocked? Of course I did! Holy cow, did I like the 13th Warrior. And do you know why I like the 13th Warrior? Because the 13th Warrior is the greatest Dungeons & Dragons movie ever written. Now, it's not about Dungeons & Dragons in any way. It happens to be set in a medieval time period, and it involves a group of Vikings. Well, it involves actually Antonio Banderas as some foreigner who has now fallen in with his group of Vikings, and they now have to travel to fight. I don't even remember all the vague details, but this village that is being stalked and hunted by these beasts from without, and the beasts turn out to be more like werewolves, or more like we're not even sure until we get there to get to the battle. And the whole thing played out exactly like a game of Dungeons & Dragons. You're watching this movie going, oh my god, I've done this! We've done exactly this! And it was awesome! And again, it's a cheesy, stupid movie. I don't care. I love cheesy, stupid movies. And it played out beautifully. You watch this thing, and the minute it gets done, it's like, I have to break out my dice right now. I need to make a new character. How can I not have a new character? Look at that. I need a Viking. That's what I need. It's awesome, awesome stuff. So, 13th Warrior, yes, greatest D&D movie ever made. Of course I love that, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. Number two. Hey, look, it's from Sirius Paul again. Again, who dominated this week? That's right, Brasky and Paul so far. All right, Sirius Paul says, how tall are gnolls? Gnolls, 6'6", 6'8". Mine would probably border closer on 7 foot. I like the idea of gnolls who are actually, if they were to stand up straight, if they could lift those damn heads up on that bent over crooked neck of theirs, gnolls would probably stand about 7'2", all right? But in practice, they're a little hunched, a little bent forward, swinging their flails at you, probably about 6.5 foot, all right, in practical terms. But that seems about right, doesn't it? I just like gnolls. I like the big hairy gnolls. I don't know why. They remind me of, I know why. They remind me of bugbears in that they're, again, humanoid monsters in D&D. They're tall, they're furry. A little bestial in nature. Gnolls are, you know, more hyena-like. I don't know why I like that class of creature so much, because I think gnolls are awesome. Bugbears are better, but gnolls are awesome. Number 45. This one is Sirius Paul again. All right, Sirius Paul asks, is Jean-Claude Van Damme's best movie Time Cop or what? I love your enthusiasm, Paul. Actually, Jean-Claude Van Damme's best movie is JCVD. I like that movie a lot. I'm not going to say love, because I think it has some problems in it kind of over-telegraphed where it was going, and so there were some issues with JCVD. But JCVD is a must-watch for everybody. You just go see the film. It is worth your time. It's on instant watch, and in the middle especially, it has this honest, weird, breaking down the fourth wall moment between JCVD and you, the viewer, and it's really heartfelt and really amazing, and the kind of strength and honesty it took for Jean-Claude Van Damme to make this movie is just, it's weird. It's odd. It has to be seen. And now, leaving out this existential trip of angst through JCVD, Time Cop was totally badass, dude. Absolutely. I love Time Cop. You know what? Any movie where he can jump up and do the splits across the countertops like that, which I think happens in every movie he does. Oh, dude, that's awesome. All right, I love Time Cop. It was all right, I guess. And it's a 45. I can't believe he just rolled another 45. That's sweet. Good job, R2. You're not even trying. Let's try it again. 21. That's better. All right. 21 is from Brasky again. Holy cow, you guys. Brasky says, give me your best Sean Connery impression. Go ahead. I'll wait. And then read the rest of this after you've done it. Okay.
He pulls a knife. You pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital. You send one of his to the morgue.
And to which the follow-up is, you call that a Sean Connery? You're pathetic. Wait, it's not too late. I know how to fix this. I'm going to pull a Bill and Ted on you. And note to self, don't forget to edit in quote of real Sean Connery later. Note to self. Go! All right. Perfect. What do you mean pathetic? That was dead on. I'd like to see you do better, loser. Number 74, and I think I'm getting about to the end of this. This is going to have to be our last one. It comes from Serious Paul, and this has been, four and five? How many has it been? It's been all Paul and Brasky this time, so good work, guys. I appreciate the input, and everybody else, I promise you, I got all your stuff. I put it all in there. We'll have a little more diversity next week, I hope. But Paul says, tell us about your favorite paranoia moment. Oh, don't I love paranoia? I already told you the story about our first real game of paranoia, the first time we really got the game. I told you that one. But my favorite paranoia moment, I have many of them. Many of them. But the one that I tell most often involves the Mark IV. And I don't know if you've seen the Mark IV Adventure. It came with one of the original second edition books for paranoia, and the Mark IV Adventure was just hysterical. The whole concept here is that the group of troubleshooters is assigned to go guard the Mark IV until its presentation the next day. So 24 hours, make sure nothing happens to it. And the Mark IV is the biggest, greatest war machine ever built by Alpha Complex. So the thing is huge. It is a tank the size of several buildings. It is massive. Is massive, with treads, individual links in the treads that absolutely dwarf the entire team, and all of its equipment could be crushed without this thing even noticing it. All right, so massive war machine covered with lasers and guns and defenses. And, oh, by the way, it's also sentient. It has a robot brain in it, and it's smart. It has no need of defense. And yet, here comes our little team of the lowest level troubleshooters to hang out and make sure nothing happens to the Mark IV for a day. It's brilliant. You put them in the room with the Mark IV, and then you just wait, and eventually they destroy everything. So we had a good time with this. But at some point, in the process of not letting anything happen to the Mark IV, somebody went in and scrambled the Mark IV's brain really, really badly. And to try and fix this, somebody else went in, and I believe it was Kyle, but somebody went in and rewired the Mark IV's brain and implanted the brain of Mikey the Lightbot. All right, Mikey was this little eager puppy robot that followed them around for the entire mission. He was part of the mission equipment. And Mikey was apparently a Lightbot. This is his job. He was a Lightbot who used to work for a photographer. So his whole job is to provide light. It's what he does. And now they've put this very simple, very basic, overeager puppy dog style brain into the controlling seat of the hugest war machine ever seen on the planet Earth. There you go. You've set the scene. Now, my brother then proceeds to die, and his new clone comes back. His new clone stands there, and he's got a captive audience. The whole team is there watching him, and my brother decides that this is his big dramatic moment. All right, so he's putting on, I mean, he's hamming it up. He's just absolutely drawing everyone's attention, hamming up this scene, and he turns, and the Mark IV is behind him at this point. And he says, "Hey, Mikey, can I get a little light over here?" All right. He's asking Mikey for a spotlight. Mikey, being a light bot, is thrilled to death. This is all he's ever lived for. Yes, now is my chance to prove myself. And he focuses every quote-unquote light that he has on him directly on my brother. And now 50-something lasers blast the holy hell out of him and leave nothing but a smoking, ruined, blackened crater on the floor. It was gorgeous. It was glorious. It was the greatest single, because you couldn't have planned that out. I couldn't have thought of that ahead of time, right? All I know is, if I were Mikey and someone asked me for light, what would I do? My brother didn't plan it. He just thought he was being cool, all right? He thought he's going to come in here like some, you know, 40s crooner and, "Yo, Mikey, can I get a little light over here?" And then he'd go on with his little dramatic swoon thing, and he'd be, all right, but no, it all played out perfectly. "Hey, Mikey, can I get a light over here?" Boom! Whole thing's gone. It was great. And that wraps up this show. That is the way to go out on a bang. Thank you, Paul. This podcast is copyright 2011 by Nerd Pride Radio. The featured music this week was the Beastie Boys with Intergalactic, with Brass Monkey, and Make Some Noise. Awesome stuff. The opening and closing theme is also from the Beastie Boys, Sabotage, but as performed by the Penelopes. The bumper clips this week were She Blinded Me with Science by William Shatner, Beck's Where It's At, and Words by Missing Persons. All bumper music is available on iTunes. Check it out. Buy it. I wouldn't put them in my show if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes. Write us a nice review. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me at any time is come over to the forums. Sign up at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Send me a message. We'll talk. We'll have fun. Bone God what sticks in my throat. Without I have a draught of corny ale, nappy and stale. My life lies in great waste. Some ale or beer, gentle butler. Some liquor thou a show. Such as you mash our throats to wash the best ware that you brew. Saint, master, and knight, that saint malt height, were pressed between two stones. That sweet humor of his liquor would make us sing at once. Master Wortley, I dare well say, I tell you as I think, would not, I say, bid us this day, but that we should have a drink. His men so tall walk up his hall with many a comely disc. Of his good meat I cannot eat without a drink, I wish. Now give us drink, and let cat wink, I tell you all at once. It sticks so sore I may sing no more till I have drunken once.